upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, editor-in-chief and founder of Technocracy News and Trends. And let's dive right into it today. I have been saying for a long time now that the biggest export in the world is going to be artificial intelligence-based surveillance. That is cameras plus AI to identify people and provide artificial intelligence to decide what they're doing, if it's good or bad, to give them trouble if it's bad. And most of this technology is being sucked up by governments around the world. The title of this article is The Viral Globalization of AI Surveillance. And indeed, it has gone viral. I wrote at the top of this article, the hottest export in the world, right behind arms and weaponry, is AI surveillance technology. And I might add, they're closely related, aren't they? Corporations and governments want to sell it, and everybody else wants it. The industry has indeed gone viral, infecting the entire planet. One article that I posted recently on Technocracy News noted that 75 countries now were applying AI technology plus camera technology to use against their citizens in one way or another. This represented well over 50% of the world's population, because some of the largest countries in the world, like India and China, are racing as fast as they can to get it implemented. And by the way, this article appears in the Oriental Review. This is an out-of-country article as far as the United States is concerned. Other people in the world are also picking up on this and noticing exactly what I've been saying for some time. Even if they don't call it technocracy straight up, they're seeing the trend. So this article says they all do it. Corporations, regimes, authorities, they all have the same reasons. Efficiency, serviceability, profitability, all under the umbrella of security. Call it surveillance or call it monitoring the global citizenry. It all comes down to the same thing. You are being watched for your own good. And such instances should be regarded as a norm. Given the weakness of international law and general hiccuping that accompanies efforts to formulate a global right to privacy, few such restrictions or problems preoccupy those in surveillance. The entire business is burgeoning, a viral complex that does not risk any abatement. The Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, by the way, the Carnegie Endowment is one of the old line global elite organizations in the world. Historically, they have been regulated by members of groups like the Trilateral Commission. In any case, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace has released an unnerving report confirming the fact, although irritatingly using an index in doing so. Its focus is artificial intelligence technology. A definition of sorts is offered for AI, being, quote, an integrated system that incorporates information acquisition objectives, logical reasoning principles, and self-correction capacities, close quote. When stated like that, the whole matter seems benign. Machine learning, for instance, quote, analyzes a large amount of information in order to discern a pattern, to explain the current data, and predict future uses, close quote. There are several perturbing highlights supplied by the report's author, Stephen Feldstein. The relationship between military expenditure and states' use of AI surveillance systems is noted, with 40 of the top 50 military spending countries, based on cumulative military expenditures, also using AI surveillance technology. Across 176 countries, data gathered since 2017 shows that AI surveillance technologies are not merely good domestic fare, but a thriving export business. The ideological bent of the regime in question is no bar to the use of such surveillance. Liberal democracies are noted as major users, with 51% of advanced democracies doing so. That number, interestingly enough, is less than, quote, closed autocratic states, that is 37%, or electoral autocratic competitive states, only 41%, and electoral democracies or illiberal democracies, 41%. The political taxonomist risks drowning in the minutiae on this point, but the chilling reality stands out. All states are addicted to diets of AI surveillance technology. Feldstein makes the fairly truistic point that, quote, autocratic and semi-autocratic states no longer happen to abuse AI surveillance more than governments and liberal democracies, but the comparisons tend to break down in the global race for technological superiority. Russia, China, and Saudi Arabia are singled out as exploiting AI technology for mass surveillance purposes, but all states seek the holy grail of mass, preferably warrantless surveillance. Edward Snowden's revelation in 2013 did more than anything else to scupper the quaint notion that those who profess safeguards and freedoms are necessarily aware about the runaway trends of their security establishment. These trends are far from new. In 1995, Privacy International published a report with the unmistakable title, Big Brother Incorporated, an overview of surveillance technologies that has come to be aptly known as the repression trade. Much of this technology is used to track the activities of dissidents, human rights activists, journalists, student leaders, minorities, trade union leaders, and political opponents. Corporations with no particular allegiance except to profit and shareholders, such as British computer firm ICI, that's International Computers Limited, were identified as key designers behind the South African automated passbook system, apartheid's standout signature. In the 1980s, the Israeli company Tataran, well in keeping with the rich tradition of repression trade, supplied the murderous Guatemalan policy with computerized death lists in their pacification efforts. This story is well worth reading to find out just how far surveillance technology exports have gone. Like I said at the beginning, everybody wants to sell it because there's big bucks in it, and even worse, everybody wants it. So there's a very robust trade going on right now with AI surveillance technology. The next article originates with the president of Microsoft. The title of this article is Microsoft Head Says Rise of Killer Robots is Unstoppable. We've heard about this before, but this time, Brad Smith, the president of Microsoft, gave an interview to The Telegraph in the United Kingdom, and he said, the use of, quote, lethal autonomous weapon systems, close quote, poses a host of new ethical questions which need to be considered by governments as a matter of urgency. I commented on this article, a new global arms race? Forget nukes, it's killer robots. Any nation or terrorist group with a screwdriver can join the melee to build killer robots. To the technocrat mindset, however, it's a much more efficient way to destroy things and kill people. Robots never sleep, they don't go on strike, they need very little maintenance, and they don't complain. The article states, the rise of killer robots is now unstoppable, and a new digital Geneva Convention is essential to protect the world from the growing threat they pose, according to the president of the world's biggest technology company. Smith said the rapidly advancing technology in which flying, swimming, or walking drones can be equipped with lethal weapon systems, missiles, bombs, or guns, which could be programmed to operate entirely or partially autonomously, ultimately will spread to many countries. Now this, by the way, is going out in an export business in the same way that AI surveillance technology is going out. Everybody wants to sell it, and everybody wants to buy it. The article continues, the U.S., China, Israel, South Korea, Russia, and the U.K. are all developing weapon systems with a significant degree of autonomy in the critical functions of selecting and attacking targets. The technology is a growing focus for many militaries because replacing troops with machines to make the decision to go to war easier. But it remains unclear who is responsible for deaths or injuries caused by a machine. The developer? The manufacturer? The commander? Or the device itself? Smith said killer robots must, quote, not be allowed to decide on their own to engage in combat and who to kill, close quote, and argued that a new international convention needed to be drawn up to govern the use of their technology. He said, the safety of civilians is at risk today. We need more urgent action, and we need it in the form of a digital Geneva Convention, rules that will protect civilians and soldiers. Speaking at the launch of his new book, Tools and Weapons, at the Microsoft Store in London's Oxford Circus, Smith said there was also a need for stricter international rules over the use of facial recognition technology and other emerging forms of artificial intelligence. He said, quote, there needs to be a new law in this space. We need regulation in the world of facial recognition in order to protect against potential abuse. And of course, the combination of killer robots with facial recognition technology would provide the ability to simply program in the person you want to kill and turn loose a swarm of robots to go find him. And when it finds him, pow, that's it. He's gone. Very, very dangerous and risky technology. The last story I might spend just a minute longer on, it concerns Goldman Sachs, the global financing, global elite firm that has their fingers into every conceivable pocket of money in the world, on a continuous basis, I might add. The headline here is Goldman Sachs, driving globalization with global warming fears. I stated at the top of this article, Goldman Sachs is pitching its own services as the report concludes, this is directly from the report, urban adaption will likely need to draw on innovative sources of financing. And guess who that would be? Goldman Sachs, of course. The global elite see only green, pun intended, green dollars, greenbacks, and the new green economy. They only see green by rebuilding everything on planet Earth. And isn't this the exact purpose of the Green New Deal? It's to retrofit and rebuild virtually every element of society. Of course, accomplishing this politically will bypass the normal circuit of creative destruction, which does happen, of course, from time to time for a number of reasons. Buildings wear out, fall down, wars happen and blow things up, that sort of thing. People get tired of things and just discard them. Creative destruction has always been the way for making way for new stuff to come in. But alas, Goldman Sachs would speed it up because now they're pushing the extreme global warming fears to convince people that they'll need an awful lot of money in order to mitigate these things. And hey, over here, guys, we got money. We got a deal for you. The article states Goldman Sachs released a report on the effect of climate change on cities around the world, and the results made for grim reading. The bank's Global Markets Institute, led by Amanda Henlian, warned of significant potential risk to the world's largest cities, which are especially vulnerable to more frequent storms, higher temperatures, rising sea levels, and storm surges. The cities generate about 80% of global GDP and are home to more than half the world's population. A share that Goldman says, citing the United Nations, is projected to reach 2/3 by 2050. Almost 40% of the global population lives within 100 kilometers of the coast, it says, and 1 in 10 live in areas less than 10 meters above sea level. Goldman highlighted three cities that would be subject to those storm surges and in the future could face harmful flooding: New York, Tokyo, and Lagos. Miami, Alexandria, Dhaka, and Shanghai face major flood risks due to being less than 11 meters above sea level. Goldman's researchers said that when starting the study, they took a broad consensus of human activity, naming emission of greenhouse gases as causing the Earth to warm in ways that are affecting the climate. Natural ecosystems would be damaged and risks to human health would rise, as well as pressures on food and drinking water. Agriculture would be massively affected. Warming temperatures and shifting precipitation patterns could reduce yields and nutritional quality, as well as change the growing seasons and agricultural zones around the world. And then Goldman goes on to give some fairly stark warnings about potential outcomes in individual areas. Changing disease patterns, for instance, says, quote, warmer temperatures could cause disease vectors to migrate from the tropics to regions where people have less immunity. This is true not only for viruses like malaria and dengue fever, but also for waterborne and foodborne diseases. Concerning water, it says, quote, half the world's population will live in water-stressed areas as soon as 2025, Goldman notes, citing the World Health Organization. Even in non-stressed areas, the quality of surface water could deteriorate as more rain and storms drive erosion and the release of toxins. These dynamics could affect everything from the availability of drinking water for people to a shortage of water for livestock and crops, with negative effects for the food supply, and to decreases in hydroelectric power generation. Now, this report goes on, but here's the bottom line. We have a case of circular reasoning going on here. Number one, it was the global elite themselves who originally created the concept of sustainable development. Actually, they didn't create it. They stole it from the original technocrats back in the 1930s, who originally proposed a resource-based economic system and said one way to get there would be to promote climate change issues. And here we are today. So the global elite themselves are the ones who created this doctrine within the United Nations. And now Goldman Sachs comes back to cite the United Nations itself on studies that they were put up to in the first place by these kind of people. So it's a circular closed system. They're feeding on themselves to work the world up into a frenzy, to run, that is, to stampede into sustainable development so that the world can be saved from that nasty old climate change. And it should be noted here, too, that Goldman Sachs references the United Nations in several instances here as to where they got the resources for this article. And of course they did. They didn't do it themselves. They're simply parroting what they lifted out of United Nations documents. But now they're promoting it to the world as the real deal. And after all, if Goldman Sachs said it, it must be true. They're a big organization, important organization. Why, they handle most of the world's money at one time or another in any given year. So we should be able to trust them. Well, my friends, I have news for you. Do not trust Goldman Sachs in anything they say. They're pandering for their own positions to create more loans, more lending, more meddling in other countries' affairs, and they'll do anything, anytime, to promote themselves as being the best solution for financing the Green New Deal. So you can watch in the future. When you see somebody like AOC standing up and crowing about the Green New Deal, or the mayor of New York, or the mayor of Seattle, or the mayor of Los Angeles crowing about their Green New Deal, you just watch and see if Goldman Sachs is not standing in the background, that is in the back of the picture, waving their little banner, money, over here, money, we got money. And of course, they'd love to broker all the money they could to promote the Green New Deal. One last thing I want to say about this is that in the beginning of the Trilateral Commission in 1973, they stated very clearly in multiple places that their goal was to create a new international economic order. They also fed that doctrine the very next year in 1974 to the United Nations when the UN declared in a General Assembly they created a resolution that was called the creation of a new international economic order. And the rest is pretty much history. This was the pilot project back then that they started to see if they could actually push this through, and they have. They've done a masterful job, strategically speaking, of getting it done and getting it to this point. And of course, it helps to have virtually unlimited funds to do it with. And they've spared no expense in buying studies and promoting companies that would promote propaganda to bring us to the state that we are today. But this is where this whole thing started in the first place. I've traced this very carefully in my book, Technocracy Rising, as well as Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order. And if you haven't read those books, please don't email me and ask me to prove my case. No, just go and buy the book. Both books are heavily documented with footnotes and bibliographies, and you can have months of research projects just digging into all the bibliography and the footnotes. And I encourage you to do that. If you want to know how the world really works, this is where you'll find it. It's in Technocracy. It's not communism, socialism, or fascism that we worry about these days. It is, in fact, Technocracy, aka sustainable development. And these yahoos are trying to turn the world upside down so they can completely rebuild it in a new model, in a new form that's never been tried and never been tested, the net effect of which will be they will end up owning all the resources in the world, and you and I and all of our civic entities and stuff will be stripped bare, will be renters in our own nation. And that goes for all the other nations in the world too, because the same thing is happening there. All those citizens will be renters in their own nation. Well, that's the state of progress today. These are rather disturbing and concerning stories. I suggest that you consider them and see what you can do to put a roadblock up in your own local area. In the meantime, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.